This is Pauline Jennings, and you're listening to Musician Talk. My guest this week is North Fielder Bo Allen. Bo started playing guitar at 13 and got right down to business by creating several cover bands in his teenage years. After a hiatus during his early adult life, I'm pleased to say he picked that guitar back up and has been going strong ever since. He's played and sang in a handful of groups throughout the years, most recently as a part of local favorite Fred the Bear, who you have likely seen playing in and around Northfield. Well, let's fill in some of the details. Let's talk with Bo Allen. Hey, Bo. Welcome to Musician Talk.
Hi, Pauline. Great to be here.
Oh, I'm so happy you are, and what a gorgeous day it is to, to be in Minnesota. Thank God. Finally, right?
Finally.
It's a great time to have you on the show because you have a gig coming up at Armory Square with Fred the Bear on the 20th, correct?
That is right, yeah.
Awesome. And what time does that start?
I believe it's 6 to 9, okay. And it's Fred the Bear and Friends, so I think we might have some other fun guests come up.
Oh, fun.
Maybe some family members.
And that's outside.
I believe it, weather dependent.
I got it. Wow, of course, Minnesota. Hello. So we're going to dig right into your musical journey and just tell me about when you first started playing guitar.
Well, my parents had divorced. I was raised in Houston, Texas. I was about 9 and already into music. There was an AM station in Houston. Mm-hmm. I would ride my bike there. Back in the day at record stores, they would have a little flyer with the top 40. So I was very much a top 40 kid. But if you wanted to get it before they sent it to the record store, you could go to the station. And I usually would go in the lobby and they'd have a stack of them there. In fact, one time my favorite DJ, Captain Jack, came out while I was in the lobby.
Wow.
He gave me, he said, "Hey, kid, you want this record?" It was Doobie Brothers Living on the Fault Line.
Oh, wow.
And they would punch a hole in the upper corner of the when they no longer needed them.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a promo. So that, like, I was hooked on music then.
Right.
My mom remarried a guy in the Navy, and he was stationed in Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. And I didn't want to go. They moved out there. She took my brother and sister. And so I had, it was me and my dad, and I had a fair amount of downtime, and my dad had a guitar and piano. And I just finally said, "Would you teach me a song?"
Mm-hmm.
And I was about 13, and I distinctly remember what it was. It was Honky Tonk Part 2 by Bill Doggett. I think he recorded it in the 1950s, probably 1956. And when you hear the beginning of that song, it's the most simple song you've ever heard. Just a basic, stripped down 12-bar blues on progression on guitar. And there's just something so complete. It's this full circle, a complete circle. And it just called. And,
nice.
And ever since then, I was sucked in and I've been playing ever since.
It's when you have that fit, it feels so natural. And
yes.
Like you're home. Right. You've come home, right?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep.
So then what did you do? Were you self-taught? Did you get lessons? Did your dad continue to teach you?
He didn't really teach me so much. At that point, we probably weren't liking the same types of music, although I enjoyed listening to him play. In Houston, there's a little area called The Village. I grew up right near Rice University, and it was pretty much a preeminent, it was kind of like Willie's of Houston, Texas. It was Rock and Robin guitars. And we would hang out there,
yeah.
You know, as kids, you know, until they kind of closed or scooted us out. And, but there, I had my eye on this guitar. It was presented to me as a Gibson SG Junior, but it didn't have the word Gibson on it. But the proprietor was maybe a little bit on the sleazy side, but he said, "No, it's a Gibson SG," and I think I got it for $100. And so, with my grandfather's help, and then my grandfather said, "Why don't you take some lessons?" And I had this little, all I had was this little pig nose amp. It was an amp about 8 inches tall, 6 inches wide. It had one knob on it, and you could work it with their battery. So literally, you could see people on Venice Beach skateboarding with a guitar and a pig nose strapped to their back.
Oh, cool.
But my granddad said, "You got to take some lessons." And I said, "Okay." So he lived in an area, there's a lot of something village. It was Highland Village near where he lived in Houston. And this music store had been there forever. And so I started taking lessons, and it was this this old jazz guy.
Oh, nice.
And he was greatly revered in the shop. I mean, when he walked in, everybody was like kind of gave him a nod, and he was so gentle. You know, he was probably a little too accommodating, because he did not push me. I liked to play, but I didn't really practice like learning scales and notes. But he really did actually want to get me based on those fundamentals and blues. So I remember doing the E blues scale, and he would he wanted me to jam, you know, and he would do the rhythm part. And he had this cool like Gibson, probably like an ES-335, but flat wound strings. And he would say, "Now you play," and I would just go up and down the scale. You know? I just didn't have the courage to leap out and try, and you know, I was too worried about hitting wrong notes. But his claim to fame was he taught Billy Gibbons of ZZ Top how to play guitar.
Oh, wow.
So really it's pretty cool lineage. But so I did that for about 6 months. Again, not a very disciplined practicing young musician, but that was great. I mean, it gave me some fundamentals. And I remember I finally got him to write out the notes to Dream On by Aerosmith. Once I figured out that intro, I said, okay, I'm on my way.
Right. You're there.
I can play Dream On by Aerosmith. Right.
Well, I find that interesting because, you know, I mean, there is a different styles to teaching music. And I think that some teachers more focus on the classical training, which all the scales, doing your scales. And that's great because then you can learn how to improv when you're soloing. And then there's more of the teaching for more of learning songs and jamming and you know, so that you feel that comfortable and you're having fun.
Right.
So you get the kid stays more engaged, I think. I mean, it depends on the child, of course. But I love that story. That is wonderful that he's there jamming. And, you know, you're supposed to solo and you're just doing your scales.
I just got up and down. I didn't even go up the neck. I just like stayed up there.
It takes courage, doesn't it, to
it
improv?
Does, yeah.
It really does. You're making yourself very vulnerable.
Right.
Yeah, I still don't vocally scat or anything like that because I don't have enough confidence in my voice that I'm going to hit the right notes.
Yeah.
And if I probably did some practicing of scales and stuff, maybe I would feel more comfortable.
And it's funny, I never could learn that way. You know, I've just always been play by ear. I've read theory, but for me, it was really learning chord structures and then playing by ear that helped me kind of get. So even when I do solo now, I'm thinking in terms of chord structures up the neck and not scales.
Right.
And so everybody's different that way. I find some people, they really are scale aficionados. And other people, I see other people that play completely by ear.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And some great musicians that have
great.
Never taken a lesson in a day of life.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, as I mentioned in the intro, you then started some bands and when you're young, which is really cool because that takes guts too, right?
Yeah. You know, I like to say I was slow and skinny, so I wasn't going to meet people through sports teams.
Got it.
And
thank God for the arts.
Yeah. But my brother, we're only 14 months apart, he got into drums, and great drummer, and he was just the opposite. He had lessons, he took lessons for a number of years, he could read music, he was a much better, in terms of training, a musician. But we played up in the attic in our home. My mom moved back to Houston, that marriage only lasted a couple years, and she was super supportive, and that was our first hand at writing our own songs, and I thank the Lord to this day that none of that was recorded. And I'll never forget, we finally had some friends come over, and one of them suggested we do a cover song. Because at that time, we just did our own original song.
Opposite of what usually happens.
And I can't remember what song it was. It was probably, it might have been even a Led Zeppelin, which my mom hated. But I remember we came down from the attic, and she said, "Well, what was that song you were playing for the first time?"
Right, nice.
So we started a band, and I remember our first gig. My mom, she had a Lincoln Mark V. It was like a boat. We could get everything in that trunk, all the gear that we had in the trunk, with you know space for two stowaways. I mean, you could totally get in.
And all the drums.
So she could drive us to I think we maybe had two gigs in the course of a year. So that was great. So yeah, we had interesting story. My buddy Jeff was probably my best friend in high school at the time. We didn't go to local public schools, so I didn't know a lot of the kids in the neighborhood. So we kind of stuck together, and he got a beautiful, I think with his paper route money, a black Fender Stratocaster, and he got really into it. And he was pretty gifted. Got to become a lead guitar player. But then, at that time, late 70s, early 80s, we were buried down on disco, and he just went 180 and got into punk.
Okay.
And I couldn't go there.
Okay.
And he also started getting into drinking and smoking pot. And he lo and behold, one night at like 4 in the morning, got our PA system, which I owned half of, loaded up his family's Suburban, and ran away to L.A.
Wow.
And we were sophomore year of high school.
Wow.
That ended that band.
That ended that.
We didn't even have our guitar player was gone, our lead guitar player, and we didn't have our sound system. So
right. That kind of ended that.
That kind of ended that, right. Yeah.
Well, you said that you took a hiatus when you went to college, and so... takes a little bit through that, what you went to college for, and then how you started playing again.
Yeah, so I went to the University of Vermont, and I always had a guitar with me.
Got it.
And it was just a great stress relief. But at that time, too many things going on to start a band. I knew some guys that had some bands, and but would come home. At that point, we'd moved to Vermont, and we had a cover band, and I think the first two summers of college, we played a couple gigs, but then it just really started to phase out. So I always had the guitar with me and went on to grad school in Colorado, where I met my wife. In grad school, we would have these sing-alongs, and my buddy Jim made these fake books. He made multiple copies, I'm sure not legally. And we would just, at that time, get together and kind of have the book out, and sometimes our whole graduate class, it was a small program, would get together.
Nice.
We were in a higher ed administration program, so kind of people that maybe wanted to be like a dean of students at a college or run a career center or something like that. One gentleman, this guy that made these fake books, Jim, was a really good guitar player, and he taught me a few chords and different ways of playing some chords. So you pick up something along the way from all these people you'd meet. And he went on after our program. He tried his hand at doing it professionally. Released a couple CDs, and but that was just a laid back time where music did take a bit of a backseat. But then it picked up when I came back here.
So your hiatus was more from playing gigs.
Yes,
you
playing
still
gigs.
Played
I
guitar.
Still played.
Got it.
I
okay,
always
good.
Had it there, but being in a band,
right,
and playing
putting effort
gigs,
into that
right.
side of it.
Yeah,
yes, got it. Okay, and then when you came to Minnesota, you decided that you had maybe some more time on your hands.
I had a little more time on my hands. So you might remember there was a music store called Centerfield Music on Bridge Square.
I think that was before my time here, but
might
yes.
Have been. That gentleman, Ted Vig, ran that store.
Oh, I've heard about him.
Yeah. I still had I had my Strat copy. I had my Fender Deluxe Reverb amp. I had a couple effects, but life was slowing down. I wanted to get an acoustic guitar, and so I traded it all in to get this acoustic guitar.
Wow.
Still needed to pony up some cash to get it. And to this day, when I look at what those things are selling for, I'm like, why did I do that? But I definitely wanted to get into the acoustic scene. So I'd gotten rid of all that stuff, but actually started playing in church and at Bethel. And what I haven't told you is, in my younger years, I had terrible stage fright.
Okay.
And
interesting.
Like, would literally get nauseous, sometimes throw up, before a show. I remember one of those gigs in Houston, my mom making me a banana milkshake to try to get something down.
Oh, how did you... So why? Why did you keep getting back on the stage with that kind of fright? That's amazing.
It's funny. And at one level, I was afraid of, screwing up the performance, but really it became a vicious cycle. I was worried about getting too nervous. But I loved it so much. Because once you're up there, and I'm an extrovert...
It goes away.
It does. It's like as soon as you get up there, as soon as you start, it goes away.
Yeah.
But even through college or grad school, I still had that same kind of performance anxiety. And it was church. there's two things. You figure playing in church, it's got to be a forgiving crowd.
Right.
That's like the gospel, right?
Right.
So I figured if I made a mistake, nobody was going to judge me too hard. Right. And the other one was having children. I have, I'm a proud father of four kids, and it just took the focus off of me.
Once I stopped,
and anxiety works different for everybody. I'm not saying that this is how, it just happened that for me, my anxiety, I think, was driven by a lot of self-focus. Once I stopped dwelling on myself, I just got, and I, getting to play in church kind of really helped in the repetition of it.
Yeah.
And Joel Cooper was always seemed to always be at my side. Joel is a former IT director at Carleton, but tremendous bass player. Wendy and I have had the chance to play with Joel a lot and and been in a couple different bands. And so that's how, I got back into it in Minnesota.
You know, that's such great insight, that what you said about stopping to focus. Sorry, I can't. How do I say that? That you stopped focusing on yourself so much, and that takes some of your anxiety away. Although being a parent can add a lot of anxiety.
It's like
too,
a different kind of anxiety,
yeah. Isn't it? Yeah.
For me, it's like it felt more manageable because it wasn't all my crap.
Right. You know? Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for taking us through that journey. We're not up to current, and we'll talk about your gig coming up, and we'll talk about Fred the Bear then. But let's move on to this first song that you chose to play today, which is called Girl with the Artificial Heart. And this is a Rob Morrow tune that you played when you were in Scaredy Cat Blackie with him, right?
Right.
And so why don't you tell us a little bit about this song, maybe about the studio experience. Was it your first time in the studio when you recorded that with
them? It was, yeah. Okay. So it was very much a studio project. Rob and Joel Cooper and I had been in a group along with Joel Bython, a local drummer. Joel's in Matt Arthur and Brett Landers. We'd played with Rob a few times, mostly at the Cave at Carleton.
Nice.
But Rob, he just a gifted, particularly lyricist, but also songwriter, and he just really all of a sudden got into, he turned his attention to writing music. And we were doing some of his, more and more of his original work. Talented family, Rob's brother, Barry, wrote the screenplay to Rain Man. Academy Award winner.
Wow.
So I think some of that rubbed off.
And
as Rob will call it, it was his vanity project to get in the studio, but we had the good fortune to be at Salmagundi with Steve McKinstry.
Yes, brilliant.
Yeah, incredible engineer. The most incredible equipment you've ever seen in terms of amps and mics.
And some vintage stuff to sounds that you might not get anywhere else, right?
Yeah. So I remember we went to the Cow and Rob sat us down in the booth and we said, hey, I'm going to make this album. Do you guys want to be a part of it? I said, yeah. What? Not knowing at all what this was going to be like. So I had these images of, like, we'd all be in one room together, you know, and maybe we'd have some baffling between us or something. But, you know, you play, and it was very different than that. Not bad or good, but we kind of all did our original takes. I remember I thought, you know, we were in the studio booth, and you have the window, and then you see the performing booth where the mics, and I thought, well, I'll be in there, you know. Instead, he went all this trouble putting this amp, like, on this shrine. This amazing tweed amp, probably from the 40s, 50s, I should say. And he got it all mic'd up. And then I just bought my guitar. I just sat next to him in the booth playing these tracks with a click track and going on. And so it was a really different process
than what you thought
it would be. Yeah. Right. And I'd worked out some things, but a lot we had to work out on the fly.
Wow.
Yeah. So a lot of the parts in this song, I had the main, there's a little intro riff there that I had created when we played it live, but most all these other riffs we just did. And Pro Tools is this incredible, magical software.
Well, there's so many layers to this song. Like you said, a lot of riffs that just weave their way throughout the song, which is very, very cool.
Yeah.
So you're playing rhythm?
I'm playing lead guitar. It was Rob's Telecaster. And a lot of this song is about fake girls, very good looking.
Got it.
I think Rob maybe
you're pined. Not saying it all very good.
Rob maybe pined after fake. At one point. Yeah, right.
Just saying.
It's a tone. Angst Before Tone is the name of the album. So
awesome.
If that tells you anything.
Okay. Yes. Exactly. All the Yeah, that is a great title. I love that title. And yeah. I love this song. It's beautifully, beautifully engineered.
It
and
is
played.
So great. I mean, that's the thing about that album. On. It took a while to finally finish. And I was only a small part of it. But the end product is just...
It's really incredible.
Really there's wonderful.
You know, there's the spectrum of sound, and a lot of times on albums, you have things fighting in that are living in that same in one little area of that spectrum. And what I love about this is just Steve, and he's just a genius. Steve McKinstry, he has things everywhere on that spectrum,
oh,
and things
amazing.
Aren't fighting, and it's all sitting right there. So.
Yeah, Steve's playing the Hammond B3 on this.
Yeah, and that's beautiful.
Yep.
So now that we set you up to listen to this song, let's take a listen to Girl with the Artificial Heart, a tune by Rob Morrow, on which my guest, Bo Aylin, plays lead guitar.
Over the rainbow and the darkness of trees, safe from the dangers of social disease. Natural disaster that's way off the charts. She's the girl with the artificial heart. Drives too fast, the traffic is slow. Got to keep moving, she got no place to go. 63 Chevy with replacement parts. She's the girl with the artificial heart. Tries to be real, tries too hard. Buys her own groceries, mows her own yard. Not looking for a man who lives in a shopping cart. She's the girl with the artificial heart. Spends all summer out at the lake. Feels right at home where everyone's fake. A couple of drinks and it's time to act smart. She's the girl with the artificial heart. Tattoo of a shamrock, one of a horse, tastefully hidden from view, of course. Looks pretty normal, what sets her apart? She's the girl with the artificial heart. Wind up sacrificial. What does she care? Her love is superficial. The lips are sweet, but the aftertaste is tart. She's the girl with the artificial heart. Does the end justify the means? She's the meanest thing I ever seen. Someone tell Lucifer she's doing her part. She's the girl with the artificial heart.
Pauline Jennings, and you're listening to Musician Talk. We just heard my guest today, Bo Aylin, play guitar on Girl with the Artificial Heart, which he recorded with the group Scaredy Cat Blackie. Well, again, what a beautifully engineered song, and beautifully written, too, the lyrics. And I love how Steve has the voice mixed so present, mm-hmm. so you can understand all the lyrics. So often I'm listening to a song and go, come on, I want to hear what they're saying. Why yeah. write lyrics if you can't understand them? Right. So I love that about Steve. He just makes sure that you can hear those lyrics when he mixes things. It seems it's the stuff that I've heard that he's done. It's really a supremely cool chill song, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
like great vibe.
Right. And it's very tasty guitar work.
Thank you.
Nicely done. Yeah. Nicely played. So I want to jump into this. We talked a little bit about when we were visiting before we started the show about this. And when we were communicating back and forth by email and I asked you to be on the show, you said, yes, but I have to get over a little bit my imposter complex I have when it comes to being a musician. And I really thought that's interesting and a good thing to talk about, because what does make a musician? How does our society define a musician? How does a person internally define that? And what elicited that comment from you? I mean, you've been playing your whole life,
right? Yeah, you know, I think some of it, back when I was a kid, I never, like I mentioned this to you, I never had long hair.
I love that.
And I remember at various points of my life, well, to really be a musician, you've got to do this or you've got to look like that. And I never really looked like that. And I never considered it as a vocation.
Got it.
You know, for me, it was always, you know, although I dreamed, I remember just turning on albums and playing guitar and always dreamed of being a rock star. but when it came down to it, you know, I just didn't feel like I was going to be cut out for it. So I think that you know, I know so many people that have tried their hand at it, at least, or, you know, kind of wanted to see it, if not their vocation, certainly like a second job,
right.
career. And for me, it was just, you know, something I just love to do. And But I have come around, you know, that I've been, I'm 55, and I've been playing since I'm 13, so maybe I should give myself a little.
I think you should, I'm giving you permission yeah. to call yourself, not that you need it for me, a musician. Yeah. You are a musician.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because, you know, do you have to be professional to give yourself that moniker? I don't think so. Of course not.
No.
I mean, you can, like I was talking about my son, he's never played in a band and probably never will, but he plays every day and mm-hmm. just for himself. And he's a musician. He is a musician. You know,
yeah.
How good do you have to be to call yourself a musician? Is your third grader who's just starting to play piano and has taken 3 lessons, is that child
right.
a musician? I don't know.
I think it was like when I took guitar lessons, I wasn't really great at practicing the material that I was asked to practice, but nobody ever had told me to, you know, pick up that guitar.
Right.
And I think when you have a little bit of that self-motivation and it's just something you're drawn to and that you want to do, I'm going to say
you're a musician. Exactly.
Yeah. Whether you're playing in front of 1 people, 100 people, or just on your own in your room.
I have a little bit of that complex myself because I'm a singer.
Right.
And so it's like the musicians and the singer, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so although you might say, or Steve might say, it's the musicians and the drummer. That's a joke. But, you know, I don't necessarily consider myself a musician because I don't play an instrument. But my instrument is my voice, so
it's
of course
voice.
I am, right?
Right.
But still, there's that, like, I don't even know why we even worry about those definitions, but we do, don't we?
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And okay, so now we're going to move on to this quote, and what I picked out was a Henry Mancini quote, and you're a financial planner, mm-hmm. and so I thought this kind of went well here. It says, he said, if you want to make money in music, get into the band uniform business. I love it. It's so funny, and I wasn't going to use it because it's like a throwaway quote, but then when I started thinking about it, I got a little deeper, which, why do we do this? You know, there are very, very few people that make money, enough money to make a living. And also, by the way, almost all of them, well, I would say all of them, self-employed as musicians. And so they have to have insurance too. I mean, it's
right.
You got to make a lot of money to be able to raise a family and have insurance, all those kind of things. Why do we do it?
Right.
Why?
You know,
why do you do it?
And sometimes we joke, like, if you figure out your hourly wage, you know, for your rehearsal time and back and forth and getting to gigs and, well, usually the advice is just don't do that because
right.
it's woefully small. Right. You know, and one level, it feels like a bit of a luxury that I can say I don't do it for the money because
yeah.
I've played with people that need the money.
Sure.
You know,
right.
That we'd play a gig and like, hey, you know, I'd be kind of cavalier about whether we get paid at the gig or after, and like, I need to get paid, like, I need,
no,
you know.
Right.
And so I totally respect the people that do that, but it is so hard. And it absolutely, if you can't define it. What I love about it is that it's a way to bring people together, community yeah. together. And some of the most rewarding things for me have when we've been able to use the music as a way to benefit greater causes and getting
yeah.
to play part of benefit concerts. Fret the Bear has done a number of them. And even back to my cover band at high school, I mean, we did a couple of benefits. And those
nice.
Are just, so when that all comes together, you know, I think that's what really makes it. But you're absolutely right. I just, to me, why I never really gave it a lot of thought, just at a business level, having some security.
Right.
It just seemed like a non-starter, you know, yeah. unless you're just, you got to not only be wicked talented, but super driven, you know.
And it's interesting because there's the bands that have to make money because that's how they're paying their bills and certain people in bands. But it is such a luxury to be able to have a living and have mm-hmm. the income so that you have so much more freedom then of the gigs that you choose.
Yes.
And where you play. And really, seriously, venues pay the same as they paid 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no growth there.
Right.
And yet everything else is so much more expensive. So this is just a plug to all venue owners. Come on, pay us more. It is different. It is difficult, and I think also that even the people that don't play out, and mm-hmm. so it's not about community.
Mm-hmm.
They get something in the brain happening there.
Yes,
with playing.
No yeah. doubt. Yeah,
it's the relaxation of it, or the whatever's released in your brain, the chemicals that come with playing, I think is so important as well, and keeps us playing and keeps us singing.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
We have another song that is not recorded.
Right.
In fact, you're going to play it live, and I'm very excited about it. This is called Just This. And before you play, you wrote this song. It's an original.
Yep.
And you don't write a lot of tunes, I think you told me.
No.
And so do you push yourself to write then if it doesn't really kind of flow out of you? Do you push yourself because you want to write? Or when you do decide to do it, and there's more than two choices here, of course, or does it when you do sit down and do it, then it kind of flows once you start it?
I definitely don't push myself.
Okay, got it.
Probably explains why there's not been a lot of productivity. I kind of wait for these moments. It's always in the morning. It's always like right before I get up.
Wow.
And that occasionally, and it happens maybe twice a year.
Got it.
Darn it. Sometimes more, that just something will flow. And that's usually some type of melody.
Okay.
More frequently than that, I'm jotting things down, just maybe song ideas. I have such a hard time telling a whole story. I always have all these fragments.
Got it.
But this is one where it finally just came out. And I was taking yoga. At Heartwork Yoga here in Northfield, and it took me a long time, but I'd never even tried meditation. But there's an element of meditation in yoga. I don't know if you've done yoga. And I was finally kind of getting this space where, you know, I could be in this class and I wasn't self-conscious, right? I was just like kind of in focus, as you say, on your breathing. And I can't remember who the instructor, it might have been Shawnee or Amy. But just this idea of let's just be here.
Mm.
Just this.
Yes.
Just this. And it just made me think about how infrequently, just in the moment, you know. And so that was whatever I was paying for that class, I got a lot out of it because that idea of being about being present.
And oh, it's
so huge. That inspired the song, what I tie it back to is just the concept of time. Because it's a devil of a thing, you know, mm-hmm. and that, you know, it It just goes by faster and faster.
Keeps marching
as you get older.
On. Yeah. My theory about that is it's math. Is that when you're one, when you're two, a year is half your life.
Yes.
Right. When you're 90, it's a 90th. Yep. So of course it goes faster. And you know, 90 times faster.
It does. Right. Right. And I make a reference to that in the song. This concept of like, despite, you know, what our perception of time is and the fact that, you know, we'll eventually run out of it.
Right.
We've got to try to just focus on right
being
here,
present
right now. And I'm trying to get better at that. So this song was an attempt at that. So.
All right. Well, let me introduce it. All right. And now, ladies and gentlemen, live from the KYMN studio in beautiful downtown Northfield is Bo Aylin playing his original tune called Just This.
You can climb the mountains, you can sail the seas, plant your garden, pick your peas. It keeps on going, and we give chase. Steal the hair right off your head, put lines on your face. It's sneaking behind your back, right under your nose. In the blink of an eye, another door will close. Remember when you were a kid, living for the moment? Let's climb out of our heads and consider just this. Like a stint in detox, the minutes shuffle by. A day can last forever for the unoccupied. Looking back at pictures, the old black and whites, I like the way it softens your eyes when you smile at the light. It's sneaking behind your back, right under your nose. In the blink of an eye, another door will close. I know these hands can heal, but they keep ticking away. Let's ease up on the gas and see just this.
Here comes the bridge.
This old guitar sounds sweeter with age. Don't need validation, it just wants to be played. What's your perspective on this? Snapshots in time, a string of ups and downs, or something divine? It's sneaking behind your back, right under your nose. In the blink of an eye, another door will close. I know these hands can heal, but they keep ticking away. Let's ease up on the gas and see just this.
This is Musician Talk, and I'm your host, Pauline Jennings. My guest today is Bo Aylin. You just heard him play live for us his original song called Just This. All right. Nice. Yes.
Thank you.
That is wonderful. There's so many lines in there. I was writing down, so I'd remember them. The climb out of your heads and consider just this, and ease up on the gas and see just this. I love that. And I could talk about being in the present moment. We could talk about that for a long time, because it's so important to me. When you're an actress, the way you're the best on stage is if you're completely in the moment. So that's why, like, if a person's on stage thinking about their hands, well, you're not in the present moment.
Right.
You're thinking about your hands. You're not thinking about, it's so important. And I think as an artist, it's doubly important. But as a human being, it's so important because, you, like you said, the time just goes. And
yes.
I could just talk about this forever because it's so important to me. But I'll turn it back to you. Wonderful job.
Thank
Wonderful
you so
performance.
Much. Thank you.
No fret noise. I like that. Very clean guitar playing. That's a beautiful sounding guitar.
Thank you. I love the guitar. Yeah.
Yeah,
and I, the lyric that the guitar gets sweeter with age, it definitely has been the case.
It's nice.
Just, so time does make us age, but that can be a beautiful thing.
Right, it can be sweet. It can be very sweet. And your voice, I really like your inflections, and you're spot on with your intonation. So.
Well, thank you.
Well,
I usually, if I'm compared to anybody, it's usually Bob Dylan.
Well, you know what? It's not because you're kind of off the note like Bob Dylan is, but it's you'd bend notes a little bit. The sense,
yeah,
I did hear that
to,
too.
Yeah.
You at the end of notes, and you bend like he does.
And if I can't get to a certain note, I just hit a little falsetto.
Yeah,
like a Dwight Yoakam-esque thing.
That's smart. Yeah. That works.
Somebody told me years ago that the difference, like Mick Jagger and Robert Plant. I mean, Robert Plant can really sing. I mean,
yeah.
Mick Jagger can't really sing, but he sounds good.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's like,
right.
You know, if I could just sound good, you know, if I could be in tune,
and
just sound, that's all that I'm trying to achieve.
And I think popping up to that falsetto as it makes it more interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I'm not a huge country guy, but I love Dwight Yoakam's voice for that reason. He just, mm-hmm. The way he has those breaks,
it
adds a certain color.
It does.
That makes it interesting.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. We're getting to the end here, and I'm wondering if you have picked out best gig, worst gig for me. starting with the worst gig.
Mm.
Anytime.
And I have to do a compendium. I apologize. You probably hate this from your guests because I couldn't think of just one, although the list is much longer for the best.
Good. And that's usually how it is. And thank gosh.
One thing, it wasn't the gig itself, because I remember the gig going well, but we had this cover band. We were called A.A. Bottom.
Okay.
And we actually, this was in Vermont, and our debut was at a high school talent show. And we got a few, I think we had like four or five songs. But we could not come up with a name. And finally, we were literally at the show because they just had our names in there. And I said, we got to name you something. And for some reason, opposites were in. We would just call. We had a friend named John Brown. We called him Bill White, that kind of thing. And one of the opposites was, you guys are from Houston, ZZ Top, AA Bottom.
Got it. All right.
And, we'll change it later.
Right.
We never did. So, I was in that band for probably 4 years, AA Bottom. But we played this little town of Halifax, Vermont. I want to say population 56.
Got it.
And they had a graduation party. And back then, it wasn't like now. Like this whole concept of you graduate from high school in Minnesota, you feed the town.
Right.
it was just the whole class got together in one place. And, and they usually had a party or something like that. So we played this gig. And I remember we got crazy, put dippity-doo in our hair to give ourselves a little punk rock look. And the gig was fine. The kids seemed kind of into it. But, there's this guy in the audience, kind of a tough farm-looking kid, and just everybody else seemed to be enjoying it and just giving snarls, particularly my direction. And so we took a break, and our singer comes over to me. He's kind of placing himself in between this guy and me.
Uh-oh.
And basically saying, this kid, don't want to scare you, but this kid over here wants to beat you up.
Oh, no.
What did I say? I don't even talk during these things. I don't know if his girlfriend maybe took a shine. I don't know what it was.
Right.
And it was just getting worse. And the guy's just getting closer
we're
playing. And I'm like, I remember it was one of the few times I didn't have to take out any of the gear because as soon as we were done, literally the rest of the guys in the band just kind of escorted me to the car. I had my guitar in my case, and I remember being driven off because he had another buddy with him that it was starting to swirl. So that was the worst ending of any gig because
I thought
I was going to get my butt kicked.
Well, and a little bit hard to be present.
It was very hard to be present.
And that's going on.
The second part of that gig was not so fun. So the other one was not long ago in the height of COVID, I think it was summer of 2020. Fred the Bear was in at the Eagles Club in Rochester, set to play outside. We were nervous about the weather. It was starting to be impending, and this entire, you know, we're all masks. Everybody's masked. We're, right. Of course, we're outside.
Right.
This entire, I wouldn't call them a biker gang, but it certainly looked like all these people come in on Harleys, and I'm sure they're lovely people, but there was outdoor seating, these picnic tables, and I just remember they went to the far, it's like as far away as they could get from the stage. All of their backs to us.
Wow.
None of them masked. Smoking and drinking. And
right.
And we played three songs and boom, lightning came. We had our gear got wet. We had,
know.
So there's those gigs too, right?
There are those gigs.
And,
yes.
And in the Prairie Creek group with Alyssa Leonard and Peter Dickens, we had a gig like that, you know, where you pray you don't get electrocuted and right, then you hope right. your amps don't get destroyed.
Right. That so. You don't ruin all your right. expensive gear.
Yeah. So fortunately, most of them were like that. Nothing, no projectiles were ever thrown or anything like that.
That's
so,
good.
Fortunately, so.
Good.
The best gig, you know, one of the best more recently was, we call it Drinksgiving. But Thanksgiving Eve.
Nice.
Thanksgiving Eve.
Got it.
I don't know what it is, but at Eminent, which just, if you've ever played there, it feels like you're in your own living room.
Mm-hmm.
And that night, this last Thanksgiving, we had just a lot of friends, the people that we knew, and it just was, we just got in the pocket and just transcended, and all of a sudden you're playing things and you're like, I'm not even thinking about it. It's
yeah.
just flowing. And
yes.
And it, that was just one of those times. And then I'd say the other times is when I've gotten to play with my kids.
Ah, yes.
So my daughter, Barrett, and I got to play at, our church has Bethel Stock.
And that's great.
Thanks
too.
To all the fine people there for putting that on. Tom Leonard, I think, donated all the staging and equipment. And
nice.
But Barrett has really developed a wonderful voice. She's a 3-time rock and roll revival performer.
Nice.
And I remember just getting to listen to her sing Angel from Montgomery, and which Alyssa Leonard, rest in peace, also would do. And that was just great.
Yeah.
Just getting to play with your kids, see your progeny.
Absolutely.
Blossoming. There's just nothing like
there
that.
There is nothing like that.
Yeah, there's nothing like that.
I agree. Well, that's beautiful, and it's a great spot to end, except for before we do, I just want to mention again that you're playing May 20th. That's Friday?
Friday.
Friday,
yep.
May 20th at Armory Square outside, if weather permits. Will you be inside if it's raining?
I think that is the backup plan,
okay,
usually.
Well, sometimes there's no
inside. That or we just cancel.
But, right, exactly.
So hopefully we'll have the same streak here.
Make sure you get out to see that. And is there, let's say I can't go to that gig because I'll be out of town. Where can people go to see where you're playing?
There's Fred the Bear. .com, our website.
Easy.
And I know we're going to be doing Dairy Days in Byron, Minnesota this year. the other gig that I have to say this at least, because this is probably going to happen. It happened to me once, and it's probably never going to happen again. But on my birthday last summer, we got to open up for 38 Special in Rochester, and we performed in front of 15,000 people.
Okay. You
so,
had to say
so
that
I had to
one.
Say that
you
one.
You had to.
My buddy Ray Cadre would be very disappointed if I didn't. And now I like to say that probably 14,500 of them were not paying attention to us, but still being on a stage in front of that many people absolutely incredible.
So
just thoroughly enjoyed that. Although some of that stage fright came back
before
that gig.
Yeah.
When you're in front of that many people, it's a little nerve-wracking, but that was great. But yeah, we're going to have a busy summer, and we're having we're leaving the county to go up to a show in Grand Rapids, and the next night in Halleck, Minnesota.
Fine.
If you don't know where that is, that's
about
as far northeast you can go in the state of Minnesota with any civilization. So, looking forward to that.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun, and you'll be playing around here, I'm sure, plenty.
Absolutely, yeah.
So,
we'll have some more gigs at Eminent and other places.
Yep, so. And to find those gigs, just go to fredthebear.com.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Bo, for being on the show today.
Thank you,
Paul. This is a lot of fun. Great conversation.
A true pleasure.
We did fill in some details about your musical journey, so thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Many thanks to Bo for joining me today to share his musical journey and to entertain us with a live song. As always, also, thanks to you for listening to Musician Talk on the One, KYMN. You have a terrific day.
Are you a hairstylist? Do you love what you do? If you have previous salon experience and enjoy working with people, Family Hair is looking for you. Family Hair is a locally owned hair salon in downtown Northfield, and they are looking to expand their team. They offer a positive working environment, high hourly